The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind. Well, hello again, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Invictus Mind podcast. This is your host, Mike Corbell, and I'm happy to be back and again bringing you another interesting story of people becoming unconquerable. If you are checking us out for the first time, this is the place where we discuss how to position ourselves for political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. As always, I'll be having a conversation with someone who I believe is on that path. And we will be discussing what they did to realize their own potential in this increasingly difficult and changing world. Joining me today is a fellow I wanted to talk to because his story is one of adaptability to change and resistance to oppressive forces. He was recently featured on a Tom Woods show where he told a remarkable story of his departure from law enforcement because of the unlawful and oppressive restrictions due to COVID-19. He has since begun an entirely new career and proven to be a successful coach to help others do the same. He is, of course, from Alberta, Canada, and has agreed to join us today. I'd like to welcome Adam Schneider. How are you doing, Mike?
It's so good to be here, man. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, you and I have been friends on Facebook for probably the last year, and I had really no idea what you did professionally until you were on the Tom Woods show, and I really thought that was an awesome episode. But as Michael Malice says, you know, it's a failed podcast, so hopefully we'll get more exposure to hear your story on this show.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love that little joke. But to be honest with you, Tom Woods has actually been responsible for a lot of the success that I'm seeing right now. And I don't want to make him embarrassed. I know he doesn't like being praised about this, but it's just the truth. Tom Woods has basically been the instrument of a lot of the success that I've got right now. And I'm not ashamed to say that. He's a great guy.
Absolutely. I think Tom Woods has brought more people to liberty than, you know, a lot of other people have since the days of Ron Paul. So definitely one of my favorite podcasters to listen to.
You bet. I agree.
Well, you know, the story that you shared was very interesting to me because, like I said in the intro, it was a story of adaptability to change. Now, in 2020, obviously, everybody knows the world ended. Or if it's not over, at least it definitely changed in dramatic ways, right? Woke up a lot of people, and myself included, has thought about what I want to do with my career. Now, I understand that you were in law enforcement, although I know that you said that you don't talk a lot about your background. I hope maybe we can touch that a little bit and why you decided to make such a change.
Yeah, you know what? I used to be a little less gregarious about my background because I didn't want to, you know, I was working for an employer. You don't want to talk bad about them. And I have nothing bad to say about where I worked before coming here. I just decided that I didn't want to be ordered to do things that violate people's rights. And there's more to the story than that, of course. I always knew that I was going to be leaving law enforcement because I knew that it was always supposed to be temporary. I didn't really want to be a cop as a career because I wanted to do a whole bunch of different things. You know, I at one point I thought I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I wanted to be a politician. And, you know, now I'm a businessman, which is definitely not something I actually expected to be, but it's always been in my blood. But in 2020, I saw the writing on the wall that nobody likes cops. It's not an honorable career like it used to be. Police themselves are just becoming disillusioned with their own careers. And rather than wait for me to get in trouble because I'm way too outspoken and, you know, get fired or something like that, I was like, you know what? I feel like this is a good time to just leave. So in October of last year, I mean, it started before that, but I've been selling for a long time online and I could talk more about that. But in October, I just told my employer, I was like, hey, it's been a good, good 15 years, I'm out. And they were amazed, shocked. They're like, what, really? I mean, these jobs are hard to come by. Everybody wants these jobs. I'm like, sure, okay. Well, give it to one of them then. Mm-hmm. I don't know why anybody would want to join law enforcement in 2021. You gotta, you know, you wander around with a mask on day, you know, for 12 hours a day. That does not sound like a career path that I'm interested in taking. So I could not be happier with my decision to leave that. Although, you know, I was always fairly outspoken while I was working in law enforcement. Now I am like free. I can say pretty much whatever I like. And although I still like to provide balanced points of view, I'm not held down by any, you know, employment anymore. So I'm a free agent.
And that's a good place to be in. I talk to people like that all the time, people who are entrepreneurs and have controlled the source of your income. But, you know, Adam, this show is not strictly a libertarian show, although that's a lot of my audience. You know, you'll probably catch some of my episodes where people are disparaging against law enforcement. But you said that law enforcement is no longer an honorable career like it used to be. So I thought maybe we can expound on that. You know, what was it that got you interested in that career choice in the first place?
Oh, that's a great question. And this is something that I really want to talk to libertarians about, because in an absence of a government, we still would have people who provide security. I don't know what we would call them. I don't think we'd call them police, because the word police implies it's a word that I'm sure comes from some kind of government function. I don't even know where it comes from, but we would call them security. We'd call them guards. We'd call them something, detectives, maybe private investigators. We would still have those functions in a stateless society. It's just that you would pay for those functions when you needed them. So, you know, Walmart would pay for a security guard to go and patrol Walmart and their parking lot. Disneyland has people who patrol Disneyland and provide security functions. It's just that those companies are held accountable for what those people do, and they're trained in a way that they can deal with things in a nonviolent fashion. I mean, when's the last time you heard of Disneyland security officers, you know, shooting an unarmed Black person? It's just never happened. And the very idea of it would make people laugh. It's just, we know it's never going to happen. And yet Disneyland literally has private police who are probably quite well paid and well trained patrolling their area. And the reason that I wanted to be in there is because I have a strong sense of justice. I hate people losing their property and being assaulted. The idea of that happening to somebody and somebody getting away with abusing someone else, just, it makes me turn angry in the heart. You know, it makes my blood boil, as I'm sure it does for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this podcast, speaking out against abuses like this. So I've always had that really strong sense of justice. I just don't think that government-run law enforcement can achieve that justice. And the reason is that the incentives are all wrong. The government sets up the rules and they hire the enforcement people to enforce the rules. So you don't have any control over which rules they tell you to enforce. So in the beginning of the pandemic, March of 2020, we were all just sitting there just doing our job, whatever, right? And then all of a sudden the provincial government of Alberta says, okay, you guys are authorized to, you know, enforce these health regulations. And there was only two of us. I look at my partner, I'm like, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, so we'd get these complaints of, oh, there's teenagers riding their bikes too close together. Are you serious? Teenagers riding their bikes too close together. And honestly, if I had been on the phone with that person, I probably would have said something that might not have been very professional, but that's just, it's irrational to complain about something like that. And so I'm glad that I don't even have to investigate stupid things like that anymore, because I don't think I could keep my mouth shut. I'm fairly sure I would have been fired by now, because the job has become political. You are basically an arm of political power. Nothing more, nothing less. Here in Alberta, we have the federal RCMP, who basically are employees of the federal government. They are police officers, and basically they go where they're told. So they have no discretion. So when they were ordered to go and build a fence around a church, 200 of them went down there, took fences out of the back of their vehicles or wherever, and started building a fence around a church, which is astonishing. I can't even believe that this is happening here in Alberta. They fenced off a church, and they just arrested a pastor who I actually know personally, Art Pavlovsky. Say what you want about Art. He's a little bit of a fireball, but arresting a pastor because he held the church service in any country except for maybe China and Saudi Arabia would be unthinkable. And for me to imagine myself doing that, I don't think I could live with myself. I could not live with myself. I would refuse to do it. But then what are the consequences to me, my family? So I just decided I'm leaving this. I don't want to be someone else's hired goon.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot there. And I think that's the overall problem with police enforcement worldwide. Police are just asked to do too many things. You know, not to mention there is a monopoly on violence and security services, which causes a problem in itself. But, you know, I love to talk a little bit about what it's like in Canada. I haven't been in Canada in a long time. I podcasted with somebody from Canada about a year ago. So you're the second one. But until just this year, you don't really hear a lot of news about Canada. But now it seems like that place is just a socialist nightmare.
Oh, you know, I love this country. I really do. And I love my community. I love the idea of Canada, the whole concept of a country. But in reality, I don't think it really works. It's kind of like a global country. The idea of having every nation under earth under one government, it will never work. We can obviously see that that doesn't work. So while I love my country, I don't like what's happening here right now. And I don't see that it'll ever, ever fix itself because we've got so many different cultures living under the same so-called, you know, national banner that I just don't see our differences ever being reconciled. So what's happening in Canada right now is that we are a little bit behind the US in terms of our COVID numbers. And rather than taking the lessons from what you guys are doing in the United States, which is living with COVID, which is real, I've never denied that COVID is a real virus, and it is, according to all the numbers I can see, it's about twice as deadly as the flu, and more so if you're elderly, much less so for young people, much, much, much less so than young people. However, nobody here, especially the government, has adjusted their thinking to the actual facts on the ground. So, of course, March of last year, the government, nobody knew anything about COVID. So they announced this 2-week, you know, flatten the curve. We've all heard that crap before, blah, blah, blah. Stay at home, 15 days sitting on a couch, watching Netflix. And everybody's like, well, your grandparents stormed the beaches of Normandy. So you can't sit on a couch and watch Netflix. Yeah. See how that turned out? Yeah, I'm sure. Honestly, I'd rather storm the beaches of Normandy than deal with these clowns. Or maybe the, you know, one of the less dangerous beaches there. Anyway, so we didn't learn any lessons. We didn't learn any lessons from our own experience. So the lockdown ended in about June. And by ended, I mean it was slightly lifted. So we could go and get haircuts again. You were allowed to go to restaurants, sit and sit down. But then they started putting in mask mandates everywhere. And the summer was fine. No summer camps, no fun stuff, just kind of warm weather, which is always nice. And that's when I started to kind of take matters into my own hands. And I'm like, all right, well, everything that I wanted to do that was fun has been canceled. So I guess I got to make my own fun. And honestly, I thought, okay, after the summer's over, they're going to end this. So the summer went by and cases started going up again. And unbelievably, people are claiming that because they ended some of the restrictions in May, it caused the surge in October. So apparently COVID waited for like 4 months before it resurged, which is just scientifically illiterate beyond words. But that's what people are saying. And the government themselves is, they have a little chart that it shows this is where the restrictions ended. And you can see that case. And there's a little gap there that's actually just 4 months long. And they only make it a tiny, anyways, deceptive. But we tried the same thing again in December. So in December, they put us under more heavy restrictions, closed the gym, closed everything. Kids went home from school for 3 weeks and cases started to drop way down in January and then surge again. So obviously there's some seasonality going on here. there are forces beyond anybody's control or even our knowledge as to what's going on. And all we're doing is like Don Quixote, we are jousting with windmills. We are taking a donkey and we're picking up our lance of lockdowns, and we're trying to fight invisible dragons with weapons that just don't work. So I have no faith in government. We have a conservative government here in Alberta. Alberta is very conservative and we're very rebellious. And we kind of fit well with Saskatchewan, which is a little bit to our east, and not so well with British Columbia, which is to our west. They're more of a coastal elite kind of people there, although there is, you know, quite a mix there. They have kind of a warm part and a cold part, if you depending on where you are relative to the mountains. I love BC, but man, their government sucks. So honestly, you know, the western provinces don't even have the same culture. So I don't even see us forming our own country. I think every province could break up and we'd still have the same problems we have now. So individual liberty is what I'm shooting for. But conservative governments have been an utter failure, just an absolute failure. The two worst governments in Canada are Ontario and Alberta. Both of them are conservatives, and even the federal conservative party has said nothing, not a word about the lockdowns, not a word about the hundreds of thousands of Canadians out of work, the doubling of overdose deaths, the weight gain in people. 42% of adults in Canada have gained 29 pounds. That's not going to be without consequence. That's a direct result of being shut in your home for, you know, 23 hours a day. And no good is going to come of this. I mean, we have socialized medicine here, and that's been their excuse the whole time. Although I know that that was the same excuse in the United States. They're like, well, we can't overwhelm our hospitals. But we don't have any politicians in Canada who actually have any guts whatsoever. They're all gutless. And it's been utterly disappointing.
Well, I suspect that the same challenges you're facing in Canada are the same in the United States, or likewise for just about every country with a bad government around the world. You know, we do have some governors. I don't live in a state with a good governor, if you want to, you know, have that word be any kind of measure. There was only two states in the United States that did not lock down. Of course, we all heard about the state of Florida and Ron DeSantis. And of course, up in a little closer to you, South Dakota.
Yeah. But,
I live in Chicago, Illinois, and we have a blue Democratic governor. And it's just it's crazy. But I'm like the only one out there challenging the status quo. I get nasty looks all day long. Obviously, you have a diverse culture in Canada, and it sounds like you have the same problem that we have here in the States. And I hate this word, the Karen factor. I like what my brother from Florida likes to say, that we call them Yankees, you know, the busybodies who think that they can rule your life. You know, what's that culture like up there in Canada?
Yeah, I've heard the term Yankee, and I always thought it meant someone from like the Northeast or something like that. I don't know. Canadians do have a pretty good grasp on American politics, but sometimes we, you know, the term Yankee is beyond our ken. So it's kind of like the smarties we have up here. You guys know nothing of that. But yes, we absolutely do have way too many people who absolutely, they're cheering this on. And realistically, there is no way that the government would continue doing this without their little cheerleading squad. So of course, Alberta actually had a fairly socialist government, a provincial government, for 4 years. And it was a number of factors, mostly because the last conservative government before that was awful. They were awful. And so people didn't want them to be there. So they gave the province over to the worst possible party, the New Democratic Party, which is basically like the Democrats, if the Democrats were doing cocaine all day long. So not great. Got us into about $30 billion worth of debt in a province of only 4.3 million people, which is not good. Of course, we've gotten in much more debt than that. So it almost feels like we'll go back to those days. I'd be happy to go back to $30 billion in debt. But if you look at social media posts all about these pastors who have been imprisoned and arrested, and their churches have been shut down, you'll see nothing but people who are congratulating the police on arresting these these people who dared to disobey. Nobody ever offers any actual evidence that these churches are dangerous. I mean, Pastor Art's church, Art Pavlovsky's church, he has like 20 people there. It's a very small building. And I don't know, maybe it's more like 30, but 30 people. There is no danger in 30 people meeting once a week in a building with, you know, any kind of ventilation for an hour. It's just that the danger is so minuscule that you couldn't measure it if you looked at the individual numbers down to the 10th decimal place. There's no danger. And yet they're treating this like Art is going out and throwing Molotov cocktails at cars that pass by. People's impression of the actual danger is so far beyond the actual facts. It is just unbelievable. Here in Canada, we have something called the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. But there's a problem with the charter. And I'm sure you might have heard this when I was talking on the Tom Wood Show. But Section 1 says that the rights in the charter are subject to reasonable and demonstrable limits as prescribed under law. So reasonable and demonstrable, and I might have that backwards, it's supposed to be something that you test in court. And we have thousands and thousands of cases where lawyers will bring charter challenges, is what they call them. They're challenging a law under the charter and saying, this is unconstitutional. You can't do this because the charter says this. So they'll have arguments on both sides. One side will present its case, and the other side has to present evidence that this doesn't violate the charter. The onus is on the other party to prove this doesn't violate the charter. No such case, no such court challenge has ever been mounted. We have been here a year, literally holding people hostage under threat of being arrested, being thrown in prison, huge fines, $2,000 fines, and not a single court case has ever been taken to actually challenge whether this is constitutional or not. And that is unbelievable. But I know it's happened in the U.S. too. You had a governor there who Tucker Carlson asked him, and he's like, hey, doesn't this violate the Bill of Rights? And he said, well, that's above my pay grade, right, which is unbelievable. I mean, you are in charge of the government and the Bill of Rights is above your pay grade. Mm-hmm. So it is pretty clear to me that these petty dictators, they really do believe that they can just do this and get away with it. And unfortunately, they have been proven correct on that, because just so many people have been driven into a blind panic over COVID, which, I mean, there obviously there's danger to people from COVID. I never ever have said, and no reasonable person has ever said that COVID doesn't have some risk attached to it. But those risks are very, you know, they're in certain areas of the population, things that we can protect, elder care facilities, right? So I'm not going into any elder care facilities. Why do I have to wear a mask at the grocery store unless you're bringing the entire population of the old folks home to go shopping? Mm-hmm. And don't do that if you're planning on doing that. So we have lost the ability to look at danger and say, this is less dangerous than this. And I blame the media and the state. It's basically the same thing at this point.
Well, yes. And I think it comes down to the education system, although I don't know what it's like in Canada. I suspect it's the same as the United States, where they just indoctrinate you to follow the rules and don't question authority. And since that is the mindset of most people, they don't even realize, again, it's not even a law that was passed. It's a recommendation or an unconstitutional executive order that were passed by the governors of these states. And so when people tell you, oh, well, it's a law, you have to wear a mask, it's like, no, it's not a law. It's just an idea. But we live in this world where you guys follow the CDC guidelines, or do you have like your own health ministry up there? How does that work?
Well, we don't have a CDC. We have Health Canada. Okay. But honestly, we don't have, you know, a spokesperson. Well, we do have a spokesperson for Health Canada. Nobody really pays attention to what she's saying. It's almost like every province is sort of reinventing the wheel themselves. We're not looking at what other provinces and other states and other countries are doing. It's almost like we're just insulated from everyone else. And that is a problem in and of itself, because we do have some very good examples of regions that have not followed lockdown policy and have done very, very well. And if you would ask, you know, the premiers and say, hey, what do you think about Texas lifting all of their mandates and the cases went down? What do you make of that? And Florida doing the same thing in September of 2020. And they might say, well, you know, there's all these variants of concern. And I would say, well, half of the cases in Florida are variants. So your concern is null and void, but we act as if that's not happening. And at this point, I've given up on a political solution. I don't believe that there is a political solution. We do have a Libertarian Party in Canada. And Tim Moen, who is the leader of Libertarian Party, I've spoken with him. He's a great guy, but he's just one guy. And we do have some other political parties. We have quite a few third parties here in Canada. You know, the control of government does tend to shift from the Liberals to the Conservatives and back again, depending on how the wind blows. But we do have quite a few third parties who get actual, you know, positions in government. So it's a fair bit different from in the U.S. where Libertarians haven't had much control in government, except for maybe at the local level here. But here in Canada, we do have third parties, but the Libertarian Party is really small and their voices are almost buried. We don't really have any major cultural figures who are effective in a sense like that. And I know I'm not blaming the people who are speaking out because their voices are just being buried, but we do need some unity in our, you know, if you're an anarchist, you're a minarchist, whatever you are, let's unite around this one thing. Let us all agree that the lockdowns have been awful. Let's start there. We don't have any foreign wars, thank God. Canada got out of the Afghanistan war in 2013, which was I don't know why they got into it, but getting out of it was a good move. So I give them kudos for that. We're not really involved in a bunch of imperialism around the world, but I think we can all unite around this this one thing and say, yeah, this is awful. Let's all get together and say that this is bad. We'll start there and move forward. So I'd love to see more of that happen.
Is there a sense of patriotism up in Canada like you think that there might be in the United States? I mean, because I think that's one of the things is that people were raised to love the United States of America, you know, whether for good or for worse, right? That's why people still support the wars overseas that the United States is engaged in. And people will say, well, you know, the president said this or the president said that. And you get that same sense in culturally in Canada?
That's a good question. Canadian culture tends to shift based on where you are in the country because mobility, you know, between the two very wide apart, far apart halves of the country tends to be a little bit less than you'd find in the States, which is more of like this, I don't want to call it a disc, but everybody kind of travels between the coasts more so than here in Canada. I mean, nobody's traveling to Newfoundland unless they are a crab fisherman. So we don't have a lot of mixing here. And so people's identity tends to be much more regional. We do love the idea of Canada and people will sing the national anthem when it's played. I mean, I even sometimes feel a sense of pride about Canada because we do have a lot of culture. We do have a lot of history and some of it's pretty good. Some of it's not, maybe not so good. We do have good people who've done great things here. So I even feel that, but I just don't think that we have the kind of, you know, national sense that you guys have there. And realistically, I think that spells kind of a doom for the unity of the country. We don't have anything to unify around. There's no central purpose other than the fight over who gets to control the federal government, which is 3,000 kilometers away. That's not a fight that I won.
What about hockey?
No, that's true. Yeah. Hockey fights tend to be pretty vicious. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Maybe we are united around hockey. That might be the only thing keeping us together. And there hasn't been any hockey this year. Yeah. We're doomed.
Yeah. That's, I haven't been to anything fun over a year myself. We're planning, my wife and I are planning a trip to drive all the way to California. So we're going to do a, you know, cross country here. And this could be the first time that I've actually left my home state in over a year, which is kind of sad to admit, but it's just this sense of, I don't know where to go, what to expect, you know, because every state is different. It seems like.
Yeah. There's so many great things going on in the U.S. right now. There's Pork Fest, there's Freedom Fest, and everything, all kinds of conventions and stuff. I'd love to go down there, but they won't let us out. And I'm not crossing the border and then quarantining for 14 days. I'm not doing that, especially not in some government hotel.
Yeah, I was wondering how that works, because I was planning a trip to Costa Rica, and we were supposed to go a year ago, actually May of last year. And then everything got crazy with the pandemic, but now people are leaving the country. How do they enforce, like, quarantine you? So they just, like, lock you up and take you away, and you have to put you in that place? Or how does that even work?
Well, that was controversial when it was first announced here, and the controversy has died down because of other more controversial things that have happened. But Canada has a special way of dealing with people who leave the country and then return. They literally force you into a hotel, which you have to pay for. Not only do you have to get, you know, a negative COVID test before you leave the country that you're returning from, which, you know what, I could even see that as being a reasonable measure. But then when you get here, you are confined to a hotel, which you pay for, and you have to stay there. I don't even know how long it is. It's something like 8 days in the hotel. You can't go home and quarantine at home. So if you got a business or you got a family, good luck with that. So they're basically making it as miserable as possible to leave the country for no reason whatsoever. And yet we even still have, apparently we have COVID positive people coming in on flights all the time. So I have no idea how that's happening or why it's happening, but I hear this all the time. I shake my head at the absurdity of all these measures, because, and there's even been some very controversial things happening in these hotels. A woman was sexually assaulted in one of these hotels by one of the security guards. So it's bad, and it's just not getting any better. I don't know when they're going to lift this. I want to go to Florida in October. So I want to see Tom Woods 2000 show extravaganza. I have a personal invite from his mom. So I'd like to get down there. And if I have to quarantine, I will, but I don't want to.
Well, if you go to that, if you make it to Orlando, I'm going to make it there myself. That's one of my my goals. So going to California and then to Florida. So, yeah, but you did mention that you don't think that the political arena is the right place to fight this battle. And I tend to agree with you.
Yeah.
I am interested in just, you know, talking a little bit about how you found the Liberty Movement yourself, though, if you wouldn't mind sharing. Have you been a libertarian a long time, or?
Yeah, longer than I would admit to it, since I was in law enforcement for so long and also a libertarian, which obviously the two of those, not super compatible. But, you know, I like I said, I feel a very strong sense of justice, and I wanted to protect people's property and their lives. So I saw that as being kind of my justification for staying there. So I've been a libertarian ever since I first listened to the Mises University on iTunes. I don't even remember what year this was, but it was previous to 2010. And I started listening to Mises University, and I was just entranced by what I was listening to. And I thought, this is amazing. Every single word I heard was just resonating within me. And from that point onward, I've been following all of the speakers there. Of course, Tom Woods was one of the speakers. So started listening to his podcast. And, you know, I was living on a farm for a long time, trying to be independent. And I ended up, you know, getting into debt. So that was did not work for me. But I'm still working on becoming financially and personally independent. And I'm doing quite well this year so far. Even if I don't have, you know, 40 acres and a bunch of sheep, I still feel like I am much more independent than I used to be. So Tom Woods is the one who I kind of got hooked into in his podcast. This was back in, like, when his podcast numbered in the 200s rather than the 1,700s as they are now. Mm-hmm. But I've expanded out. Now I listen to Dave Smith. I listen to some of the Joe Rogan episodes. I'll pick up anybody who's got a voice and is singing my song.
Well, that's awesome. I'll share another podcast I listened to. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but Jason Stapleton has a show called Wealth, Power, and Influence. And
yes,
I like his show a lot because it's really shaped my thought process going forward. And I think it's something that you picked up on, even if it wasn't directly from Stapleton, is the idea of creating a nomadic wealth in your life, controlling the source of your income.
Yeah. No, I've heard of Jason Stapleton. He was an email guru back in the day, and I didn't realize he was more than that. So I follow him on Twitter. I might have to start listening to his show again.
Yeah. And so his show is all about, you know, making ourselves free, empowering ourselves through our own abilities. You know, he's always teaching about learning new skills, having a digital presence, which is really what you've changed. You transitioned into being in law enforcement. You've created your own online company, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I love it. No, you're speaking to my soul here, buddy.
So you do print on demand. Now, you know, I've spent the last year learning a lot about the internet and all kinds of digital platforms and stuff like that. And I'm slowly adapting to this, but you're having quite success in this new endeavor.
Yeah. Selling physical products on the internet isn't new, but it is transforming a lot of people's lives. And it's really mainly due to the ease of entry into a lot of these things. Print on demand, for members of the audience who don't know, is you're basically taking a mug, a t-shirt, a tote bag, a pillowcase, anything, a necklace. There's all kinds of products that you can print onto, wallets, and you print some kind of design on it, and it adds a significant amount of value. So I can buy a coffee mug from Walmart for $2, but it's just a coffee mug. The people who buy print-on-demand products, they're not looking for a coffee mug. They're looking for a great gift for their mom, for their dad, their uncle, their teachers, something like that. So I'm not selling, you know, coffee mugs. I am selling joy and happiness to the people who buy those. And so I have done a lot of my own selling, had my own business, was just kind of keeping myself until about 2018. And I said, I love this business so much, I got to start talking about it. And I started a podcast because if you were not starting a podcast in, you know, the 20th century, are you even human? Sorry, the 21st century. Everybody's got their own podcast, their own show, their own presence online. But it's the people who know the most about something that are going to rise to the top. So because I have experience selling and because I'm pretty good at explaining things in a very simple, easy to understand way. It's not that I'm necessarily more skilled than other people. It's just that I'm good at explaining things in a way that makes sense to people. So I kind of stood out in that field. And I started my podcast with Tom Woods, his link where you can buy hosting through his link. There's probably a few people who are familiar with that, but started the show. Oh, yes, you are one of them. Yes. Tom is so great for that. He's just creating this structure where people can start their own things. I love it. Anyway, so it's been going well. And then 2019, I thought I need to start training people and really structuring this so I can build my brand and get people out there, get people creating their own business and teach them how to do it. So I created a training course where I actually teach people who have never heard of selling online. If you know how to use a computer, if you basically know where the keys are, you can type your name on a computer, you can start a print-on-demand business. It is fairly simple to do. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy because nothing is ever as easy as it sounds. There's always some challenges to get through, but that's why I've created a course to get you through the challenges of creating a print-on-demand business. And Etsy and Amazon are both free to start using. Etsy in particular is very user-friendly. Lots and lots of people shop on Etsy for gifts for their family. Personally, I have made, over the last 4 years, I've made over $250,000 in sales from both platforms. So I'm very happy with my efforts from that. And my sales continue to grow. In 2020, I had the best sales year ever. When everybody was locked in their house, my income was quite secure. So it's almost like it's a recession-proof business. I mean, nothing's ever really recession-proof and definitely not inflation-proof, but online businesses are becoming the new normal. Anybody who's thinking of starting a restaurant, you might want to reconsider that in light of all of the basically all the boots that are going to be crushing you, you know, the government can come in there and basically shut down your business anytime. I have a business that nobody can shut down unless they literally come and steal my computer. I mean, I have a few computers, so you'd have to take them all. Nobody can shut my business down, and I love it.
It turns out that move was quite prophetic since you started around 2018, not knowing that the world could end the way it did. And now you've proven successful. So it seems like it might have been an easy transition once you start seeing the money coming in. I'm sure that, I don't know if you're married, Adam, but that conversation seems like it wouldn't be a very hard conversation saying, hey, I already got this thing established. I don't want to do this thing in law enforcement anymore. I think I'm just going to dedicate this full time.
Yeah, I am married. I have a beautiful wife of 20 years this year, which makes me younger and older than I look. I don't know which some people say I look 25, but I'm actually 40. Hey, however, when I went to my wife and I said, I think I'm done this year. She knows how difficult law enforcement is, the shift work, just the grind it puts on you. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, cops are poor, downtrodden people, but it is a hard job. You're working overnight. You're staying up late. It actually adds, it takes away from your life in the same way that smoking would. If you were a regular smoker, you lose the same amount of life that you would as you do working shift work. So it was grinding me down. And my wife, she knows who I am, and she loves me for what I am. And I said, I think I'm going to quit my job. And she said, are you sure that's a good idea? And I said, I don't know, but I'm going to do it anyway. So sometimes in life, you just have to take that step, and you don't know if it's going to pay off. And that's a step of faith. Like, I'm a man of faith. I'm a Christian. And I know that God is always protecting me. He's brought me through so many things. He's brought me through alcoholism. He's brought me through, you know, health crises. And I said, this is the right thing to do. And I trust that it's going to work out. Even if it's difficult, even if I have to work more than I do now, I'm going to take this step. And it has worked out.
Right. That's exactly why I invited you on the show, Adam, because I love hearing those stories of people taking chances, of risking everything and going into the unknown, but coming out victorious, because that's really the only way that we can get freedom.
Yeah.
You know, I started saying that, you know, with everything going on in the world, the unknowns that the government will place on our heads, you said the boot on our neck, that's very real. I have a conversation with my wife, and she loves when I talk about her, so I'll share a little bit here. She works in a restaurant. She's a waitress, and she was put out of work for 2 months, and she was just stressing out the whole time. And ever since June, she was able to go back. But I put myself in a position a long time ago where I am not able to be shut down either. And I think that's probably the best thing that people can do going forward. You know, even if you have a good career, you should start that side hustle. You should start, you know, having options just in case, because we can see that overnight, for whatever reason that we have, or whether it's good or bad, you know, everything could just end.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad to hear that you've done the same thing. You know, you look at somebody and you say, you might ask yourself, what do they do for a living? And, you know, if I had to guess what you did for a living, I'd say that you look like an insurance salesman. Sorry.
You've been listening to my show, haven't you?
No. But yeah, having something on the side that you can rely on is important. And I used to, you may not think so, but I used to clean windows as a side hustle. I know I don't look like a window cleaner, but you actually make a lot of money cleaning windows. You wouldn't believe how many people hate cleaning windows. So even if you're not thinking of starting an online business, you need something that you can fall back on when the house of cards falls down.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's you and I are similar kind of people there, Adam. That's awesome. I was reading over some of the notes that you share with me. Most people, when I invite them on the show, I throw them a little prep sheet. I really like some of the things that you mentioned. When you talk about not participating in the cathedral, what did you mean by that?
Yeah. So I'm borrowing that term from Michael Malice, of course. If you haven't already listened to Michael Malice, you need to. Michael Malice is an anarchist. He's not necessarily affiliated with any political party, but he makes his way around some pretty high end circles. He's been on Joe Rogan, and he, I don't know if he coined this term. I don't think he did, but he's kind of popularized it for me. The cathedral is the place where all of the elites and the government and the media, their voices echo between each other. So the cathedral is where all of these narratives get reinforced by the other people in the cathedral. And it's just like if you walk in and everybody's singing in the cathedral, they're all singing the same song. So it amplifies the voice, the narratives, the false narratives. And I can say that because they are objectively false. The notion that COVID is going to kill us all is objectively false. It is not true. Mm-hmm. The idea that we can lock down and save ourselves from COVID is objectively false. That is the cathedral. So when I say that I'm removing myself from the cathedral, I'm taking myself away from the influence of those people. So I'm making myself more, I guess, international in a sense, where, you know, if something happens to my local area, I still have my income because it's not, I'm not relying on the people in my neighborhood around me. So I'm building resilience in my life, in my business, in my income. But at the same time, you need to be involved in your community in some measure. Mm-hmm. You cannot simply divorce yourself from your neighbors. I don't think it's healthy. So in a sense, I'm withdrawing from the media and I'm becoming more involved in my local community, not the local politics necessarily, although there is some place you can actually influence local politics much easier than you can influence national politics. But just getting involved in your neighbors' lives, you know, take care of their kids when they need it, help people out, you know, give money to someone whose house burned down, be involved in your community, raise a family. And if you don't have a family, help someone else raise their family. Make life for your neighbors as easy as possible, because if things really happen, you know, if there's ever like an actual gas shortage where there's no fuel, those people to your right and to your left, those are going to be the people that you rely on for literally survival. And if you don't know those people, if you haven't been putting into their lives, they're not going to give anything back to you.
Very wise words spoken there, Adam. I give you a chance to plug anything that you have so people can find you, because I'm sure that you're coaching a lot of people with some practical wisdom from the libertarian angle as well as what you're doing online.
I appreciate that, Michael. So you can find me at salesondemandshow.com. That's the name of my podcast. I do occasionally talk about topics of liberty and, I definitely dunk on socialism as much as I can, because it's pretty easy. It's kind of like, you know, hunting fish in a barrel with C4. But mostly I talk about how to build an online business that you can do on the side, you know, half an hour a day, an hour a day, whatever time you have to spare. You can build yourself an online business. I'm not going to tell you that it's easy, but it is fairly simple. And I have a training program that can get you through the hardest of the hurdles and get you selling much faster than I did. You know, I had to kind of figure all of this out for myself, even though I had mentors around me. The training wasn't quite as advanced as it is now. So I've done everything I can to make this whole starting a business thing for you as easy as possible. You can find me there, salesondemandshow.com/start. Started today.
Here's where I throw most people into the fire. Adam, are you Invictus?
Always.
I love it. Well, I appreciate it. You have a great attitude. You have the right ideas, and you're no longer working for what I'll call the enemy, but we'll leave that up into interpretation for whatever that means. So I definitely wish you the best of luck, and I'm sure we'll connect in the future.
I appreciate that, Michael. Same to you.
Thank you. Well, that's it for the show today. I would like to thank the returning listeners who keep coming back each week, and for those who have given me feedback as to the stories we have shared here. I know in the world of podcasting, there is a tendency to recycle and reuse many of the same guests who have made appearances in other shows. But when someone has a great story to tell, it seems prudent to me to let that person share it with everyone who needs to hear it. For that, I do want to thank Adam Schneider for sharing his story with us and encourage you to check out his website if you are interested in learning how to start an online business. We will continue to bring great guests each and every week here on the Invictus Mind, And as I am always looking for ways to free up my schedule so I can deliver on a promise I made to you to shower you with value, I will be trying to focus on developing the Invictus newsletter further. I apologize if you have subscribed and are waiting for the show notes of previous episodes, but because I've fallen behind, I just need to kick myself in the pants to get it done. You can get on that mailing list by texting the word Invictus, I-N-V-I-C-T-U-S, to 33777, although I do believe after July that will no longer be a viable number, as the major phone companies are trying to eliminate the short codes that marketers are using. I will, however, keep everyone informed in how to get that great information. In the meantime, if you like this show, go ahead and subscribe to your favorite podcast player and share this with three of your friends and leave me a review. You can find me on any of your social media channels under my name, Mike Corbell, and feel free to comment on what you like, what you don't, or if you have a story that proves that you are Invictus, I would love to feature you on this program. So until next time, keep doing all the good things you are doing in this world. Keep your hope up, stay productive, stay informed, and most of all, stay free. Take care, my friends.